Okay, so let's get started. I think it's important to note that one of our primary source for this Tonglen teaching is the first Panchen Lama. Okay, and the first Panchen Lama is known as Lobsang Chukyi Gelson, and he's from the 16th century in Tibet. And I'm starting out with this because I think some people may have heard about the recent history with the Panchen Lama, and that a later reincarnation of this very first author of this Tonglen that we're studying from is now, you know, in the news a fair amount, or has been over the last, you know, 10 years, because as he was identified by His Holiness the Dalai Lama, he was immediately taken into China and has been there ever since. So I think that as we kind of study his original material from the 16th century, that we kind of keep in mind this lineage which carries through even to today, and that we're still very much a part of us, and he's still very much a part of us, and that he's not some historical figure back in time, he's very much a figure in our current world. So with that, we are going to be studying our primary source for this tongue, then, is the first Panchen Lama, Lobsang Chukyi Gelson. And if anyone wants his dates, they're 1567 to 1662. By the way, just as a side note, there's readings for this course, and it's a PDF file of about 100 pages. We didn't print anything out yet. We're going to give the website address at the end of class, and you can go to the site and download it. You can read it online, or you can print it out if you want. And a lot of this type of detail is in there. So if you don't have to take notes if you don't want to. There's no homework for this class? And there's no quizzes?
There is homework.
Is there? The homework is?
Meditation.
Ah, yes. I take it back. Okay. So I've written on the board there the words Tonglen. And we've put it in our flyer. We've been talking about Tonglen, but we haven't really identified it. So Tonglen is a Tibetan expression, and it means really giving and taking. Okay? And that's the literal translations of Tong. Tong. Everyone say Tong?
Tong.
Len?
Yeah.
Right. So Tong Len really is it's giving and taking. And it's sometimes called the practice of giving and taking. Our actual implementation as part of the meditation is the reverse. It's going to be Len Tong, ironically enough. We're going to learn to take away the suffering of others first, and then we're going to go about giving them what they need. And at the end of class, I'll explain why that is. So we're actually, it's called taking and giving sometimes, in which we take upon ourselves some of the pain of others. Like you mentioned earlier that you had some friends who were going through some very serious illness, and you want to help them. And some of the best way to help them is to actually identify their pain and try to take it away. And they say it's like, it's a form of compassion really, where a mother wants to take away the pain of their child, right? No one wants to see any child in pain, and especially a mother with their child, and then they say, their only child. There's some strong desire to make sure that child never is in any kind of pain. And we're going to work on this compassion through this meditation technique, and to get to the point where everyone else, we want to take away their pain. As we take away their pain, right, it's a visual exercise. Meditation is a mental practice for us right now. This is a beautiful practice, and we'll talk about some of the reasons why later, but for the most part, it's a mental practice. It is something that we can do as we walk, as we're in meetings, and if we're in the park, you know, you can do this meditation. Wherever physical form you're in, it's still a mental practice. And part of that is an exercise of seeing and visualizing someone else's pain and trying to take it on and bring it inside of you, okay? There's a couple of important points about that now. Primarily, what you're trying to do, what you will be doing, is bringing basically a symbol of somebody else's pain in the form of a black tarry substance or black smoke. And when you bring it inside of you, it is not to assume that pain. You don't want somebody else's cancer. You don't want someone else's broken leg. You don't want someone else's, you know, old age and you know, arthritis and pain, or someone else's hunger. What you're trying to do is bring it inside of you, and then you destroy it. So you're eliminating it for them, and you're obviously not taking it on for you. Okay, so it's a very, very important point. It's not possible for you to take on someone else's cancer so that it ripens on you. karma doesn't work like that. The laws of causality don't work like that. If you haven't planted the seed, you won't get the result. This isn't every spiritual teaching. You reap what you sow. If you didn't plant the seeds for that, say, in that case, cancer, you will never get cancer. No matter how much tonglen you did of somebody with cancer, it is impossible. So what you're really doing is taking this on in a mental way, bringing it inside of you and destroying it, okay? As a result of that, your world changes, okay? You are changing your world by working on your breath. It's very significant practice what we're doing here. And it's actually a very high practice. The fact that we are working with our breath, we're taking and giving with our breath, is a very significant practice. Remember I said we're bringing it inside of us. When we bring anything inside of us on our breath, we're affecting our subtle body. Behind our coarse body and our coarse breath that we, you know, have here, we have an underlying subtle body, which inside has chakras, channels, and subtle winds. Our outer wind is a manifestation of the inner winds, okay? And as our, for example, we have a sense of fear. Whenever we have fear, we start to go like this and we start to hyperventilate. You can see how something mental is affecting our outer breath. What's the connection between the mind and the breath? Look for it. Try to find where the mind and the physical body, especially the breath, meet. And the only place they meet is in the subtle body. The subtle winds share the channels that the thoughts ride on. So they say the thoughts and the winds ride in tandem. So because you're actually affecting your subtle body through your outer breath and your thoughts, you're actually then affecting your thoughts, which then affect your outer world. You will get to the point, if you're so good at this tonglen and great compassion work, you won't see people who are suffering. Okay, you will have eliminated suffering in this world. All right, you will see nothing but beautiful people in this world. And the reason is because you've eliminated, you're creating your world from the inside out, and you're affecting your world how it projects from outside of you by the fact of you're using your breath. Okay? So the way tonglen works is very, very profound. Very, very profound. We're going to approach it a little bit later in some later classes. But you should know that working with the breath is sometimes called a higher practice, or sometimes it's done a lot in tantra practices. And it's very interesting that this aspect has been excerpted out of the higher teachings and brought out to an open teachings. It's a sign of how powerful it is and how important it is and how, in the stages of the path where we're going to talk about, where Melissa is going to talk about bodhicitta and what it's like to be a bodhisattva and developing great compassion. So this is a fantastic way to change your world. And yes, you can change your world just by working with your breath and your thoughts. And no, you cannot take on actually someone else's pain. So you should do this fearlessly, right? You're going to work small to begin with and very precise, somebody's pain in a very exact way. You're not going to try to take on everyone's pain in the whole world. But you should do it in such a way that you have no fear of taking this on. And it will be so much more powerful.
Can you just go over that part where you said you got that basic concept and then you said the breath? And I missed the connection between that and the breath. Where does the breath come in? I missed the last part.
Okay, so the breath comes in because we're going to be actually, the meditation that Melissa will lead tonight will use the breath. Okay, she'll say, like, on an inhalation, do this. Okay, and tonight we're just going to do the taking, the inhalation aspect. So what happens is when the breath comes in, you are affecting your subtle body inside. Okay, because there's, that's where your inner and outer body meet in the subtle channels.
Okay.
And it works both ways. You can affect your subtle bodies through your outer breath, and your subtle body affects your outer breath.
Okay?
I
got it.
I can go over that again.
Okay.
I think we'll touch upon it again later as well. I want to get on to the core part, but I wanted to also give an overview on how tonglen works in a high level, and that you should be not fearful about taking on, thinking about other people's pain and then taking it on. It's something we don't do naturally. Naturally, we avoid other people's pain. We avoid our own pain. You know, I've known people who didn't tell their own family members that they were going in for cancer treatment until like the Monday before. People avoid pain, whether it's their own or someone else's. So we have to break down that barrier. We have to act towards ourselves and others in a very different way. But feel free, if you have any questions, to ask them out like that.
No, I,
okay.
I, you know, I'm I was focusing on one thing you said, and then you started on the breath, and I was saying, what's the connection?
Okay.
But it's going to be a breathing meditation,
yes,
as well as a mental aspect.
Yeah.
Thank you. Got it. I don't want to flunk.
So, does everyone here know what the Lam Rim is? Is there anyone I should say who doesn't know? Okay, could somebody, does anybody have like a brief description of what the Lam Rim is, since I know you've all studied it? Maybe like one sentence? Steps on the path to enlightenment is what it means. It's basically like a cliff notes of the Buddhist path. So everything that is in the entire Buddhist path, you can find in the Lam Rim. And there are many different versions. The shortest version, I think, is like a page long. And it's written in this very beautiful poetry, but it also can be expanded into like volumes and volumes and volumes. So in the simplest and shortest Lam Rim, the Lam Rim is divided into three sections, three steps on the path. And who can tell me the first step?
Is it like the Noble Truths you're talking about?
No. This is not the Four Noble Truths. These are three sections in the Lam Rim, written by Jason Kappa.
Here's a cheat. If anyone's read this book.
Renunciation. Yep, so renunciation is the first step in the Lam Rim. And I just want to read a little quote from the Lam Rim. I think this is very beautiful. When you meditated thus and feel not even a moment's wish for the good things of cyclic life, and when you begin to think both day and night of achieving freedom, you've found renunciation. So this verse tells us a couple things. The first thing that I think is really important is he says, when you've meditated thus. So just like it says, it steps on the path. This is a step-by-step process. They say, if you want to reach this goal, first you must do this, which will lead to this, which will lead to this, and eventually you're going to get renunciation. So it's a path. It's a map to get you there. So what is renunciation? Renunciation is this, it's this realization. It's a, you know, rewiring the synapses in your brain, rewiring your understanding of your world. You're no longer seeking pleasure in, you know, let's say ice cream and sunny beaches and cool water, even though those things will give you pleasure. You understand their true nature, which is that they don't last and that they will run out. And so you want to go after something that will last. You want to go after a lasting happiness. And when you have that thought, day and night, like they say in the quote, when every thought that you have is entirely infused with this idea and this understanding that everything in your world is impermanent, that you are impermanent, then you have renunciation. So that was just a very, very brief, quick explanation. Does anybody have any questions?
Clear.
So then, what's the second step on the path? Bodhicitta, right? And so bodhicitta is basically, instead of having renunciation for only yourself, you have renunciation for everybody in the world. So because you understand that everyone in this world suffers just like you, you develop this compassion. And once again, this is a realization that comes about after meditating, after contemplating, after doing these practices. You reach this understanding that everyone else in this world, like you, suffers too. And you don't want to see them suffering. You can't bear to see them suffering. And because of that, you decide to become free of this, you know, of this misunderstanding of the world, so that you can free everyone else as well. You're not just doing it for yourself anymore. You're doing it for someone else. So, just a quote here is, this is a quote from the commentary written by Ken Rinpoche and Geshe Michael Roach. When we cannot stand to see it go on, the suffering of other beings, for a single second more, we finally feel the true wish to reach total enlightenment immediately for the sake of every living being. Well then, you can say you've gained the wish for enlightenment. So it's not until you have this thought infused in every action that you do can you say you've achieved bodhicitta. So, bodhicitta, Geshe Michael says, is very hard to explain and hard to conceive of. It's a type of love and it's a type of compassion. And, you know, oftentimes people say, oh, you know, look at that nice monk. You know, he gave somebody his last cookie and now he's going to go hungry. Oh, what a bodhisattva he is. He definitely has bodhicitta because, you know, he's very kind. He's being very selfless. But Geshe Michael points out that that's not bodhicitta. You know, kindness is something that we will use to develop bodhicitta, but oftentimes bodhisattvas, people who have this bodhicitta realization, will act in ways that, you know, may look very harsh. You know, they may not give somebody their last cookie because they have a higher use for that last cookie. And so you may say, ah, well, he's miserly and he's selfish. But really, no, he's a bodhicitta because he has something higher in mind than staving off somebody's hunger or, you know, pleasing their sweet tooth for the immediate moment. So it's within bodhicitta that this Tonglen practice fits in because Tonglen is going to help us develop the compassion that we will use, which will eventually develop into this bodhicitta. And Geshe Michael says time and time again, you know, bodhisattvas, anybody who practices bodhicitta, they all started out like us, you know, just the regular joshmo, and all it takes is practice. And if you do this meditation, like, you don't even have to think that you're doing it correctly. You know, you don't even have to think that you're doing it well. But if you do it a little bit every day, you know, you don't even actually have to be sitting on your cushion, though we will suggest that's how you start to learn this practice. You can be doing it as you're walking, as you're sitting on the subway, but if you do it a little bit every day, consistently, day after day, like you, there's no choice, but you will reach the final goal. You will develop compassion. Like, you won't be able to run away from it. It will chase you down, you know? Anybody have a question about bodhicitta? Okay,
so now that we know where we are, we're in the second stage of the Lamrim, which is on basically developing a good heart to serve other beings, right? And developing the wish to reach enlightenment for the benefit of other beings. There are a lot of subsections within this middle section of the Lamrim. So where does it fall in within that? So now we put it in a big container and said it's in the second division of the Lamrim, but now we need to go on further. There are, you know, developing bodhicitta is sometimes called developing the wish. So as you develop the wish, there are two different main techniques for developing the wish. And the wish is just a short reference to the wish to achieve enlightenment for the benefit of all sentient beings. People just say the wish. So this wish is what Melissa was just talking about, this bodhicitta. And there are two main practices in that. The first one, which we're not going to talk about, is called the seven-step process for developing the wish. And it's a series of seven steps where you actually bring your mind and your actual practice through to develop into and attaining ultimate bodhicitta, not only in the form of a wish, but also in the form of action, okay? Tonglen does not fit within that first section. Tonglen fixed in the second section of developing bodhicitta. And I've written the Tibetan up there. It's called Dakshen Namje. People say that? Dakshen Namje. So Dakshen Namje means exchanging self and others. Okay. You can see how there's a whole section of texts of exchanging self and others as a way of breaking down the walls between yourself and others. And that's one of the first things you have to do, and you have to become a master of that in order to attain ultimate bodhicitta. Right? To be a true bodhisattva, you cannot have divisions between myself and somebody else. Okay, that doesn't work. You will not reach your goal. That's anathema to actually getting there, of serving all beings if you see yourself different from all beings. So within the teachings of exchanging self and others, Tonglen is one of those practices. The practice of taking and giving is one of the practices of traditionally given in scriptures for exchanging self and others. Okay, so that's where these teachings fit in within the history of the entire path toward